Good morning. It is Kale and Company live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday morning. And we are presented by Northeast Delta Dental with individual and family plans designed to fit your lifestyle. You can learn more and find your plan at DeltaDentalCoversMe.com. And our guest on this portion of Kale and Company is Dr. Beth Kurland. And Dr. Kurland is a clinical psychologist with three decades of experience and looks at our human tendency to avoid difficult emotions and the pressure so many of us feel to be happy. Good morning, Dr. Kurland. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great.
It is great to have you with us, and I know you have a new book just out, and it's called just out, right? When was it released?
Yeah, as of yesterday.
Yesterday. Wow, we get them hot off the press here at WKXL. And the name of the book is You Don't Have to Change to Change Everything. Explain.
Ah, okay. So this book came out of kind of from two places. One was my own personal experience, really my own life's journey, and the other was in sitting and working, really having the privilege of working with so many hundreds of patients over the past 30 years or so. And I think that a lot of people come into my office, but also from my own experience as well, that we can think that we need to fix or change ourselves in order to, you know, be okay. And we also feel, you know, so there's a lot of emphasis on this kind of self-improvement and not enough that I think so many of us feel it at our core. And I think part of that, too, is a sense of feeling that a lot of our feelings aren't, you know, when we're feeling something other than happy, that, like, what's wrong with me? I shouldn't be feeling this way. And a lot of people who, you know, have come into my office and maybe, you know, have all kinds of things going on in their lives that are understandable, that they're feeling all kinds of emotions, and they may be apologizing or say, you know, I'm sorry I'm feeling this way, or I don't know what's wrong with me. And so this idea that what I've really seen over the years for myself and with my patients is that change really comes about when we start with from a place of acceptance, when we start from a place of meeting and greeting these difficult emotions right where we are and having ways to work with them and through them, but not focusing on really fixing ourselves, but more about changing how we're relating to our inner experiences in a way that brings greater ease and well-being.
Now, in your experience, how do people typically deal with unpleasant emotions?
I think typically we tend to either push them away, try to ignore them or suppress them. And short-term, there may be some time or place to do that. But I think in the long-term, the research shows that that doesn't tend to work so well for our emotional well-being and health. And the other side is that sometimes we can get swallowed up in our emotions. You know, we can get gripped by them and caught in them. And I can certainly speak for myself. I've, you know, experienced both of these quite a lot. And I think as human beings, we all do. And in the book, I really try to share a kind of a middle path, a different way where we can neither push away nor get swallowed up by what's there, but somehow be able to hold and see what's arising and hold our inner experiences in a way that allows us to relate to them in a different way. And just like a little analogy maybe that I think of sometimes. Imagine if you're standing in the middle of a storm and, you know, the rain is pelting, the wind is whipping up and, you know, kind of ready to either sweep you away or whatever. But you're able to maybe put on a really protective raincoat or have a great umbrella or go, you know, seek a little awning with some shelter. Then you don't stop the storm from happening, But when you do these things, you bring some greater ease, some greater safety to be able to allow the storm to pass without being, you know, swept away by it. And, of course, you may not be able to stop that storm.
Now, in your book, you share six vantage points that offer another way that doesn't, you know, swing your mood swing from either extreme, but offers a path to well-being, even in the midst of challenging emotions.
Yeah. Yeah. So that I can sort of jump in with the first vantage point I talk about is called the anchor view. And the anchor view is all about, really, there's some background in the book of understanding what's happening underneath the hood, so to speak. What's happening in our bodies? I think we know our cars better than we do sometimes our own, you know, autonomic nervous system and how that plays such a role in everything that we experience in our lives. So there's a little bit of a foundational learning around what our autonomic nervous system does and how it plays a role in these emotions that we feel. But the anchor view is all about finding stable ground, being able to grab onto an anchor in the middle of a storm to bring us, you know, a felt sense of safety, again, even though we may not be able to stop the storm. And really what I'm talking about is ways of regulating that, for lack of a better way of saying this, the autonomic nervous system energy in our body. But, you know, a lot of people are familiar with that fight or flight response that we can feel when we get anxious or angry.
Oh, I think we might have lost Dr. Kurland. I guess must have been on a cell phone.
So. Yeah, it looks like the feed got cut.
We will try again with Dr. Beth Kurland, and she is our guest on this portion of Kale & Company, and her new book just out just yesterday. You don't have to change to change everything. Right now, we're going to change phone lines and see if we can get Dr. Kurland back on the program here on WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday morning. We've made it halfway through the week. I hope you're doing well. Bruins won last night in come-from-behind fashion in Florida. Big win for the Bees last night. So that's the good news. And we have Dr. Kurland back. And, you know, you're talking about people knowing their cars better than their own bodies and personalities, and I think, do you think sometimes that people have a tendency to take better care of their cars than they do of themselves?
I think that does happen, unfortunately, yes, you know, and often, for so many people, I think we're better at taking care of other people than we are taking care of ourselves, too, and I think both are important, for sure.
No doubt about it. Now, your book, you talk about survival wiring versus thriving wiring. Can you touch on that for a moment?
Yeah, so I think I started maybe even touching on that before we got
right.
cut off, and I'm so
right.
sorry about whatever
yep.
happened there. But, this idea that we have these protective circuits that are wired into our body, and it made sense through evolution when our ancestors, you know, our Stone Age ancestors, came up against external threats like the saber-toothed tigers, the body developed this response to fight or flee, or sometimes to play dead, in a way of being able to protect itself. And this survival wiring is still very much part of our biology. And, you know, we don't experience saber-toothed tigers typically, but, you know, it could be anything from the traffic jams to the relationship challenges, the day-to-day struggles that we have, and, you know, just all of the stressors that we have in our life, that we can very quickly sometimes go into this kind of fight-or-flight mode of anxiety or anger or irritability or frustration, or sometimes feeling more shut down, you know, pulling into our shell, so to speak. And this wiring is there to protect us, but sometimes we can get stuck there, or sometimes our brain almost overreads threat, you know. And there's this other, we have this other kind of wiring in our body that we're also wired to thrive. We're wired for connection. We're wired to explore, for curiosity, for perspective taking, for problem solving, for being able to see a big picture. And so really learning how to be able to find our way, you know, to the survival, from the survival wiring to more of our thriving wiring, and understanding how all of that works can really empower us. And you know, just a quick example, I'm thinking, like, even during something like the pandemic when I wrote this book,
yeah,
I was really aware that I'm saying for myself anyway, you know, my survival wiring was revved up for sure and for good reason, especially in the early parts of the pandemic. But I was really aware of kind of catching myself saying that, okay, me walking around in this heightened state of stress and anxiety and caught in worry and sitting here is not going to actually help me stay safer in this moment. And what else can I do, and what else can I invite in to be side by side with my fear and worry to help bring more ease and help me through this situation?
Dr. Beth Kurland is our guest, and her new book just out, You Don't Have to Change to Change Everything. And we'll be back with more right after these words. Kale & Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Dr. Kurland will rejoin us after the break here on NHTalkRadio.com, WKXL, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. We'll be right back. Kale & Company Live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental, and joined on this portion of the program by Dr. Beth Kurland, who has a book just out yesterday, as a matter of fact. You don't have to change everything. And Dr. Kurland, thanks for staying with us. Can you say more about change and why you don't have to change to change everything? How does change come about if we're not changing ourselves?
Yeah, so let me share, this is one of the vantage points, but I think it speaks, generally to all of them in some ways. But I have a vantage point that I call the mirror view. And this one is, you know, often we look in the mirror, sort of the actual mirror, and we see what's wrong with us, you know, the things we don't like, right? Because of the negativity bias of our brain, we tend to focus on the negative. And this certainly translates, again, to ourselves. I was very fortunate in my early training to work with Dr. Robert Brooks at McLean Hospital at that time. And he taught, that change really comes about not by finding what's wrong and trying to fix it, but with finding what's right and trying to strengthen it. So really finding our, what he called our islands of competence, but the things that we're already doing well, you know, and being able to then strengthen these. And so I really have taken that a lot over the years. And this idea that instead of looking at all the things we're doing wrong, if we start to really notice the little things that we're doing that are moving us in the direction of well-being and have ways of building off of that, and using the inner, I call them inner resources, you know, but these inner strengths that we already have that we very likely are overlooking because we're focusing on the things that we don't like that we're doing or the things we think are missing. But when we can start to notice what's actually here and be able to dial up the volume on that, then we're not, we're not really changing ourselves. What we're doing is we're using what's already here and tuning into it and bringing it out to the surface and more into our day-to-day life.
So you mentioned that you started writing this book during the pandemic. What role did your own healing journey play in your desire to write this book?
Well, I feel like kind of a different layers to that question. I feel like my life is kind of a healing journey in different ways. I think it's always a work in progress for myself. Very early on in my life, I lost my mom when I was 15 she died. So there was a lot of grief that I didn't really work through fully until I became an adult, until later in my life and working with some wonderful therapists and just doing a lot of my own healing work. And then, you know, I think there's just been observing the nature of this human mind, certainly my human mind, and the way that our mind can sometimes create added suffering for us. You know, we have these things that happen in the world that are challenging, but then we have the narratives that we attach to these things that happen. And often can sound like, you know, I'm not good enough, or, you know, imagine a breakup of a relationship and then feeling like, oh, there's something wrong with me, you know, that happened. So we can add these layers of suffering for ourselves. And I know I've certainly done that. And this is part of our human nature. And so really being able to understand that and find ways through that. And part of my journey too has been, I have been studying mindfulness meditation and practicing mindfulness meditation for many, many years now. And that has been immensely helpful for me. And really, I've woven pieces of that into the book as well.
Yeah, a friend of mine wrote a book about mindfulness. How has it helped you?
Well, you know, mindfulness, there's so much to it. But just to say really briefly here that one of the things that it can help us do is to step out and back from the intensity of whatever we're feeling. So it's kind of like, and I write about this actually in the audience view, another of my vantage points, rather than being the actor on stage caught in the drama of, you know, the moment, it's kind of like we're sitting in the audience and we're able to see what's happening. And we're a caring audience member, you know, it's not a dispassionate kind of, I don't know, thing, but it's like, yeah, I like watching a niece or nephew on stage, you know, you want the best for what you're seeing, but we're able to observe ourselves from this little bit of a half step back. And when we can notice, you know, our own emotions and our thoughts from a little bit of that more spacious step backwards, and looking on, you know, at what's unfolding, it really gives us a little bit more space and choice to decide, you know, what next? How do we want to move forward into the next moment?
So the book is just out, and our guest is Dr. Beth Kirlin. The book is You Don't Have to Change to Change Everything. What would you like your readers to take away from your book?
Well, I guess I would just say that well-being, I think, is, and this is not me, this is, you know, other researchers talking about this, is in some ways it's like a skill that we can really, I believe that we have all the wiring already, you know, we have everything already inside of us, and it's also something that we can cultivate and practice. And there are very concrete ways that we can do that. And in the book, I tried to share lots of practical exercises, and I even have 26 audio meditations that go along with it. But there's all kinds of different exercises to really practice being able to cultivate well-being in different ways. And I think even sometimes just small steps each day can really add up and make a big difference in the long run.
So are you working on a follow-up to this? What are you working on now?
Well, I'm actually working on a course that I'm going to be doing that is going to take the content of this book and maybe a little bit combining some of my other books as well, and doing an online live course where I can really lead people through this, because I think, you know, we all need support and togetherness in different ways. It's hard sometimes to just do things on our own. And so I'm really excited about coming up with something where I can bring people through who are interested in this work into an actual class where we can together go through all of this.
Well, it's an intriguing book, Dr. Beth Kirlin, and we appreciate you joining us this morning here on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is our pleasure. Thank you so much. And again, the book just out yesterday is You Don't Have to Change to Change Everything. Kale and Company Live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com for a Wednesday morning. Want to tell you tomorrow, we will be joined in studio by Dan Weed of Weed Family Automotive. And we'll be talking about the disaster that took place yesterday morning in Baltimore. Search for the six construction workers who were presumed dead following the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore resumed this morning as details are emerging about their identities and families they leave behind. And it's presumed that those six people have passed away, and the search is ongoing this morning in the harbor. And Dan Weed will talk tomorrow, and we'll talk about the number of cars, the imported vehicles that come in to that area, and how it's going to impact the auto industry, especially here in the Northeast, as Baltimore is one of the busiest ports in the Northeast. It is going to affect and impact commerce of all kinds for quite a while to come. So many cars are, land in the harbor in Baltimore, and so many cargo ships as well, with all kinds of cargo. People are saying that, the prices on Amazon are going to go up as a result of what took place yesterday. So it will have a long-lasting impact, no question about that. And we'll explore a little bit more of that tomorrow here on the program. We'll take a break. Kale and Company will continue right here. WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. We'll be right back. Kale and Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Thanks for joining us today. If you have anything that you would like to contribute, feel free to call 603-224-1450. 603-224-1450. Well, big news yesterday, of course, overshadowed by what took place earlier in the day in Baltimore, but there was some news on the political front yesterday as independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced that attorney and high-tech entrepreneur Nicole Shanahan will be his vice presidential running mate heading into the November general election. Not Aaron Rodgers, not Jesse the Body Ventura, not Tulsi Gabbard, but Nicole Shanahan, who at one time was married to the inventor of Google. So, they divorced, and she got a large settlement. Now, let's put it that way. A native of Oakland, California, the 38-year-old Shanahan is a philanthropist with a long history of donating to Democrat and left-leaning causes, including supporting President Biden in his 2020 election bid before switching to Kennedy when he launched his own run for the Democrat nomination last year. Of course, he's going to run as an independent candidate. And right now, didn't realize this until yesterday, but right now, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is on the ballot. And I mean, I know there's a ways to go. It's November. We're only in late March right now. He's on the ballot in one state right now, and that's Utah. Kennedy announced Shanahan by praising her insight into how big tech uses AI to manipulate the public. She also talked about her athletic ability and willingness to be a partner in a number of policy areas, including on securing the border. Personally, just I think it was a victory for Donald Trump yesterday. Because there aren't any Republicans who are on the fence about Trump. You know, and Trump, you know, has his following, and most of Trump's following will not be swayed no matter what takes place. And then there were some that are on the fence about Donald Trump. But now I think that decision has been made. I mean, if you were, you know, thinking about a vote perhaps for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and you're a, you know, down the middle Republican, centrist, as they call them, Republican, not a far right Republican, but somewhere in the middle. And you were thinking about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. perhaps as an alternative to Trump. I think that decision was made yesterday. You're not going to go with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. with the woman that he chose to be his running mate. Shanahan, originally Nicole Shanahan, the running mate now officially of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Shanahan initially dropped her support for Kennedy after he decided to run as an independent, but later got behind him by giving $4 million to the super PAC that boosted RFK Jr.'s candidacy with a John F. Kennedy-themed campaign ad that ran during the Super Bowl in February. You might recall that one. It was an old, the soundtrack was an old JFK commercial when he was running for president, and superimposed the face of Robert F. Kennedy. And so it was bizarre. It came out of nowhere. He didn't, apparently, RFK Jr. didn't even know that that ad was going to run in the Super Bowl. I mean, that's the way the story goes anyway. It's hard to believe, but that's the way the story goes. Shanahan also previously donated to Democrat presidential candidates Marianne Williamson and Pete Buttigieg during the 2020 presidential race and threw more than $150,000 behind progressive Los Angeles District Attorney George Gascon's 2020 election bid. She is founder and president of Baya Echo Foundation, a private firm that describes its mission as focused on new frontiers in reproductive longevity and equality, criminal justice reform, and a healthy and livable planet. And as we mentioned, she was previously married to Google co-founder Sergey Brin, a marriage that ended following reports that she had an affair with Tesla and ex-CEO Elon Musk, which both of them deny. She has one daughter from her marriage to Brin. And following her divorce from Brin, Shanahan met partner Jacob Strumwasser, who works for the Bitcoin software company Lightning Labs. The two participated in a love ceremony last year to celebrate the commitment to their relationship. So, you know, you just reading through this biography, you know that anybody was thinking about any Republican centrist, let's say, who was thinking about maybe RFK Jr. would be the way to go, and maybe less turmoil around him or than there is Donald Trump. Well, Trump got a victory yesterday. Big victory for Donald Trump, because there are some, you know, far left leaning Democrats that are going to jump on the RFK Jr. train right now. And we all know that a third party candidate has little to no chance of winning, especially we're approaching April and he's on the ballot in one state. I don't know. It seems to me that it was, you know, if he had picked, for example, I'll just give you one example because I'm a fan of hers and I think she would be terrific, not only vice president, but president, and that's Tulsi Gabbard. And, you know, I know a lot of Republicans disagree with me, and but I think Tulsi is wonderful and would have made a real good running mate. Someone who's pretty much down in the middle. Now, she was a Democrat. She's now an independent, and she's doing some work for Fox News. But she is not out of the realm of possibility as a vice presidential selection for Donald Trump. She has been mentioned, although Marco Rubio has been mentioned recently as well as a viable vice presidential running mate for Donald Trump. And if Robert F. Kennedy Jr. had taken Tulsi Gabbard as his vice presidential running mate, I think that could have made a large impact on Donald Trump. But this way, he's going to be taking more votes away from Joe Biden than he is Donald Trump. He's taking zero votes away from Donald Trump now. If he ever had a chance of doing that, it's down the tubes now. He's not going to get any votes, anybody to swing to him that was, you know, on the fence, maybe, about, you know, voting for RFK or Donald Trump. He's not taking any votes from Trump now. He may take some from Joe Biden, but certainly more from Biden than Donald Trump with the selection of the vice president that he made yesterday. You know, it's no knock against her. It's just the way she leans, far left. So he eliminated anybody from switching from Trump to him. All right, NBC News has officially terminated its very short-lived relationship with former Republican National Committee Chair Ronna McDaniel, according to a memo sent to staff by the network's bosses. There is no doubt that the last several days have been difficult for the news group. NBC Universal News Group Chairman Cesar Conde began Tuesday in a copy of the memo obtained by Fox News Digital after listening to the legitimate concerns of many of you, meaning many of the MSDNC on-air types. I have decided that Ronna McDaniel will not be an NBC News contributor, end quote. Because she's a Republican. Because she has some differing views. And you can't have any differing views on MSDNC. Joe Scarborough and his wife said so. And others on MSDNC said the same thing. Conde, who's the guy in charge, acknowledged McDaniel's hiring had undermined the goal of a cohesive and aligned newsroom and offered an apology to his staff. End quote. For hiring somebody who had different views than they did. Okay. That about sums it up in a nutshell. We'll take a break. Kale and Company continues right here, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Oh, welcome back. Kale and Company live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Presented by Northeast Delta Dental and the Friday Fun Bunch coming up this Friday here on WKXL. Kitty Ray and Tom Raffio, President and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental. As the countdown continues, folks, to the upcoming total solar eclipse, which is expected to bring thousands of people to the Granite State. But state officials have a rather unusual request for many of them. Don't leave major highways. While the eclipse is expected to be a major tourism draw, since northern New England is one of the few places in the Northeast that will be in the eclipse's path of totality, it could be difficult getting around New Hampshire on the big day, which is Monday, April 8th, between a high volume of traffic and rough road conditions. That's why the State Department of Transportation and some law enforcement agencies are urging people who visit Coos County at the top of New Hampshire to stay on state highways rather than secondary highways and local roads to see the eclipse. According to a statement that was released on Monday, some secondary highways and local roads were not designed to handle large volumes of traffic, and springtime in the North Country can bring frost heaves and very soft shoulders. Traffic generated by the solar eclipse will impact roads throughout New Hampshire. Please obey all officers assisting with traffic control, as well as all signs and traffic control devices. Statement also warned that heavy traffic south could be in store for travelers after the eclipse, for sure. But why don't they stick around and spend some more money in New Hampshire? The New Hampshire Department of Transportation expects between 8,000 and 15,000 vehicles to enter the North Country. That's a spokesman said that. If you have any questions about what to expect in New Hampshire on the day of the eclipse, you can call 603-223-6169. And that's one way to do it. Or you can visit nh.gov/solar eclipse. Now, the rare total solar eclipse, the last in the U.S. for decades, will cut across the U.S. from Texas in the south and up through northern Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. Tourism officials in all three of those New England states have been preparing for the influx of potentially hundreds of thousands of visitors. Now, the total solar eclipse is expected to occur between 3:20 and 3:40 p.m. on April 8th, depending on the state, though a partial eclipse will occur about an hour before and afterward. So there you have it. Today, well, big day. Wednesday, March 27th. You know what it is, Andrew Gibson, our esteemed producer behind the glass? It is.
I could wager a guess.
What? Okay, go ahead.
Is it World Theater Day
it
today?
It is World Theater Day. You win. You win. You'll get an extra donut this Friday.
Oh.
It is World Theater Day. How are you, a true thespian yourself, going to be celebrating World Theater Day?
Well, I have a rehearsal this evening, so I guess that's the best way to celebrate.
And you tell our audience what you're rehearsing.
I am directing a murder mystery comedy titled Getting Away with Murder, going up with the Pittsfield Players at the end of April.
There you go, and we will keep you posted on that. And World Theater Day. How, you know, if I had known ahead of time, I just, you know, kind of looked at it this morning, but World Theater Day, it would have been a great day to be in New York and go see a matinee of something in the afternoon and then a show at night. Which, I've been known to do from time to time, but never on World Theater Day. It's also American Red Cross Giving Day. If you would like to give a pint of blood today, that would be very nice. If you've never done it, it's not a very painful experience. And certainly one pint of blood helps up to, I think, four or five people. So, and blood is always in need. So, this is American Red Cross Giving Day. It's also International Whiskey Day, National Joe Day. Remember last week, I think we had a Sloppy Joe Day. Well, this is simply Joe Day. So, anybody named Joe, it's your day. Even that guy in the White House. It's National Little Red Wagon Day. National Scribble Day. Here's a good one. National Spanish Paella Day. Oh, that's good stuff. And it's also Quirky Country Music Song Titles Day. Oh, man. Like, for example, You Can't Roller Skate in a Buffalo Herd. Remember that one by Roger Miller? Well, maybe not. She Got the Gold Mine and I Got the Shaft. Jerry Reed. How Can I Miss You If You Don't Go Away? By Dan Hicks. You Can't Have Your Kate and Edith Too. Performed by the Statler Brothers. And the ever-popular You're a Hard Dog to Keep Under the Porch by Gail Davies. All kinds of quirky country music song titles. That just scratches the surface. But the good news is, if you're a fan of Krispy Kreme donuts, McDonald's is planning to sell Krispy Kreme donuts in their restaurants nationwide. We're giving you plenty of warning here. By the end of 2026, the chains announced on Tuesday, the rollout is going to start in the second half of this year, but it will take roughly 2.5 years as Krispy Kreme more than doubles its distribution to satisfy the partnership. For the duration of the agreement, McDonald's will be the exclusive fast food partner for Krispy Kreme in the United States. And as a result of the announcement yesterday by McDonald's and Krispy Kreme, shares of Krispy Kreme soared 39% on Tuesday. The stock was earlier on track for its best day ever. So the partnership with McDonald's is a major opportunity for Krispy Kreme to expand its reach. It delivers donuts to 6,800 third-party stores as of December 31st. McDonald's has roughly 13,500 restaurants in the United States and plans to open 900 new locations nationwide by 2027. So at any rate, Krispy Kreme will be available in places that probably it has never been available before, maybe even Concord, New Hampshire. You know, I think the only Krispy Kreme location now in New England is at the Mohegan Sun Casino in Uncasville, Connecticut. I believe that's the only Krispy Kreme location. In fact, there's two inside Mohegan Sun. But you have to drive, you know, like 2+ hours from this area to get there to get a Krispy Kreme donut. So now, by late 2026, they're going to be available at McDonald's. So there you go. They are, you know, they're very good donuts. I like the Krispy Kreme donuts. But, you know, there are places around here that have terrific donuts as well. But McDonald's will be adding the Krispy Kremes. I think the only other Krispy Kreme, there were a few in Massachusetts years ago, but for some reason they all closed down. I guess it's, you know, people, you know, America runs on Dunkin', right? So Krispy Kreme didn't really thrive in this area. The last one I knew of, other than the one in Connecticut, was in Saco, Maine on Route 1. And that closed. So I think there's only one location where you can get those Krispy Kreme donuts right now here in New England, and that's a couple of hours away from here in Connecticut. All right, that'll do it. Jordan Montgomery will not be a member of the Boston Red Sox. He signed a one-year, $25 million deal with Arizona last night. The Red Sox couldn't have given him $26 million to top the offer. They need him in the rotation. They're not going to get him now. He's going with the National League champion Arizona Diamondbacks. Red Sox open the season tomorrow night in Seattle. We close the show right now here in Concord, New Hampshire. And thank you for joining us on this edition of Kale and Company. And folks, remember to always look on the bright side of life. We'll see you tomorrow with Dan Weed in studio. Have a great Wednesday, everybody.